Greetings, everybody, and welcome to week 9 of Making Sense of Your Dollars. This is John Mattioli, and this week we talk with Debbie Cook, who is the chair of the Information Access Committee. This summer, the American Council of the Blind passed a resolution, which I read through during the last installment of Making Sense of Your Dollars. As I said, Debbie is the chair of the Information Access Committee, and in fact, I serve on that committee along with her. The resolution, we both agree, and I'm sure the whole committee agrees, is fine in that it requests access to a piece of software which we don't currently have access to. But it does have some problems, and I asked Debbie to discuss those problems to begin with.
There's two or three pieces about this resolution that are problems. One of the problems is that they are directing a manufacturer. They're not directing the manufacturer just to make their products more accessible. They're specifically telling them how they want it to do, and it's almost to the place of directing the look and feel, and manufacturers don't want that.
Right.
So I think it is okay to say, you know, we really hate that it's, you know, not accessible. We really want you to make it accessible so that we can do certain things, and then talk about the functions rather than the programming techniques. So rather than telling them to use plain text, which is not even an appropriate concept in Windows,
right,
and rather than telling them, you know, this and that and the other, you say, I want to be able to use it from the keyboard, I want to be able to know where I am, and I want to be able to access the functions. And I think those are okay things to say to people.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that really turns me off about this resolution is it goes back to talking about, you know, blind people using the program in DOS, you know, and it's like, I'm sure they care, you know. So it's probably more helpful to have some demographic information about the numbers of people, you know, which we can help people collect some data on. I mean, through the listservs and through other kinds of things. You know, how many people are actually affected by something like this? Are we talking about 10 people? Are we talking about 10,000 people? It's really helpful to have some demographics. And then the other thing about this resolution that bothers me is it directs a lot of people to go out and do supportive things to it without finding out whether they do support it or finding out whether those are in the realm of the things they can do. So, for example, it directs Microsoft to withdraw their logo. It directs, which is an unprecedented thing, and it directs the Microsoft Access Advisory Committee to do certain things. And without checking to find out whether those things would be within the purview of that group. And so, you know, when you're doing a resolution like this, it's really a good thing to kind of go out and put your ducks in a row so that you create a scenario of things that absolutely can happen or that someone will make happen for you. You know, it would be helpful if the whereases had some good demographic information about the people that used it. It would be helpful if the whereases had some information about the attempts made to contact the corporation, you know, to provide a little history. It would be helpful if those kinds of things were sort of in place with a resolution like this.
What is it, then, that the Information Access Committee is supposed to do with a resolution like this?
Well, a resolution like this, I think we would take the spirit of, and we would try to do some of the things that, in fact, you're already sort of taking up, which is that you're trying to locate someone from Intuit to talk to about the issues and about the commitment. I think it is probably appropriate for us to try to actually collect some data to see whether there is a significant number of users that we can say that it's going to make some difference somewhere. It would be really helpful if anybody actually used this product in their employment, for example. I don't know of anyone personally who does, but that doesn't mean there's not someone. And there certainly may be some small business people, you know, who do. And it would be very, very helpful to know if people are, and in fact do, because if there actually are things that have happened to people as a result of not having access to it, that would be good anecdotal stuff.
People use the term accessible software,
right,
as if we have this great definition of exactly what it is that is an accessible piece of software. And I know that myself, as a software developer, I'm not clear on what it really is. And I'm wondering if you know of a good definition of accessible software.
Well, there are accessibility guidelines that have both been developed by Microsoft and put forward also by IBM, and there are some different there and those if you pull those pieces all out together and you look at them, there are some pretty definite I would say guidelines that you could that would create software with accessible characteristics or accessibility components. And I think it's probably better to define it that way, or to talk about it that way, rather than to define something as accessible. Because, to me, you know, accessible really means is somewhat an individualistic kind of thing, which says that I can use it. Now, I may not be able to use it for quite a whole wide range of reasons. And you saw at the convention the Quicken discussion raised that, because several people stood up and said, I don't see quite what the problem is here. I can use it pretty well. And other people said it's not usable at all. And in fact, there's a statement in this resolution that says that Quicken has very little keyboard support. Well, it actually has a load of keyboard support. I mean, it has some other problems. But as far as I know, it still has quite a bit of, you know, keyboard support. At least, I haven't used the 2000. Up through 99, it certainly did, you know, have. But there are actually on the Microsoft site, there are guidelines, and there are also guidelines on the IBM site that deal with the design of controls, that deal with the design of various elements, and that deal with the idea that there should be keyboard equivalents for everything that's for every thing that can be done within the program. And there are also, by the way, guidelines for things that have nothing as much to do with blindness but have to do with other disability kinds of issues. So there's guidelines about what to do with sounds in your program and all of that. And that's, you know, that's all guideline. It's not enforceable law. It's very practical stuff. And if people do it, you know, for the most part, screen readers and other accessibility aids would be able to respond to it correctly. And what I understand, and I'm not a software developer, but what I understand about Quicken is that the main issue for that program is that, in fact, there are no window controls at all, that basically it's simply a drawn program rather than a, you know, programmed program, and that basically the whole program operates under one or two under two window controls, instead of each control being defined, you know, edit boxes defined and buttons defined and different fields defined and the different things that are part of it. And so it actually lacks a whole lot of programming, but you can't see that on the screen because it looks perfectly good like a check register and like it should.
Yeah, and if that's the case, it would be a monumental task.
It would be my understanding from talking to several people, you know, who are developers and who have looked at Quicken and who have looked at Intuit stuff and who have even talked to some people at Intuit at some point, is that that's what the issue is, and that what had really happened was that in the transition over to Windows, that basically they got onto a fairly fast track for development. They have a development schedule that's pretty virtually annual, and they basically for them to make this product accessible now requires them to virtually stop production and completely rebuild the whole interface. If Intuit, you know, begins a whole new application, they probably have a fighting chance of making it more accessible. But fundamentally, as they've built this application, it's become easier to just draw these things than it has been to actually form all the controls. And now I don't know, without being a developer and without being at Intuit and knowing their production schedule, exactly what it would entail for them to take that apart. So it seems like what we have to do with companies like Intuit is try to figure out how could we negotiate a better win-win situation, because I think that it's not reasonable and not going to happen that we can demand that they completely redesign their software. But it might be reasonable that we try to figure out if some things can be made more accessible, and it might be reasonable that we try to figure out what they can do in terms of partnering better with developers of accessibility aids, and what kinds of commitments they could make for software that they develop in the future that doesn't exist yet. And I think that's the pattern that we have to be in with a lot of developers who have existing products.
Several years ago, a few screen reader developers got together with Intuit and began the process of making Quicken more accessible. I asked Debbie what happened to cause that process to stop.
Where we all blew it, I mean, I sort of blame the access vendors, but actually we blew it too. I blew it, and we all blew it, was that when Intuit was working closely with Kendra Joyce and Alva Access, and their stuff had become more accessible, Intuit was really jazzed. This is why I don't actually think Intuit hates people with disabilities. Intuit was very jazzed about the fact that Henner Joyce had developed scripts and that Alva Access had developed some configuration files and mostly some techniques that they marketed for how to use their products with Quicken 98. And Intuit came to CSUN and they gave away Quicken 98 to everybody that came to the session, and it was all demonstrated, and they actually walked us through all the features and sub-features, and I mean, it was very informative. It was very, very interesting. And they liked people with disabilities, and they saw us as a market, and they were very grateful to HJ and Alva Access for what they had done. And I think they were. I don't think it was fake. And everything was really very good. And where that broke down a little bit was that I think there was then an assumption on Intuit's part that HJ and Alva Access and whomever else would just kind of continue to fix whatever was wrong, you know, and that they would continue to do it. And there wasn't any, it would have been nice if those software developers, the Access developers, would have maybe come back even and asked some of us to help go back and forth and negotiate with their Intuit contacts about, well, now that we've had this success and you've seen that there is actually a market share and your class at CSUN was flooded out with people and you've had all kinds of calls and people, you know, buying your stuff and everything, now that we've got this little market interest here, what do we need to do about future products? So it would be great to sit down and say, you know, this was a very good thing, and everybody did a really good job, and how can we do that again? And maybe what the Access Committee has to do, Information Access Committee has to do, as I'm thinking about it, is facilitate the regeneration of that discussion with you know, Intuit and the software guys. And I mean, maybe that's where we start this back, because it was... I think that this would be different if we had all followed up on what had happened, because Intuit was really jazzed. But I think they assumed that it was resolved. Nobody really explained what it would take for it to keep that way. Well, by the way, you'll all have to keep talking to each other. You'll all have to keep working with each other. You'll all have to, you know, instead of, well, hey, we've made this, you know, we've conquered this. Everybody's running around, we've conquered Windows 98. Well, nobody thought about whether there'd be a Quicken 99 or a 2000 or a 2004 or whatever.
But this sounds like a never-ending cycle.
It is a never-ending cycle, except that what you could do, what you might negotiate, what my vision for the negotiation would be, is that we would negotiate that this cycle will continue on to the end of whatever your current production commitment is today. In other words, if you tell me, today I'm fundamentally working on what I perceive to be Quicken 2002, then I say, okay, as you begin the work on Quicken 2003, what changes could be made with respect to accessibility? And then you work out a sort of a priority list, and you say, we might be able to do nothing, you know, outside the current way of doing business until we get to 2003. One of the things that has to happen as part of this negotiation is that vendors or reasonable people out there who want to be, this would be a wonderful role for VidPi, for example, have to become beta testers for the new product.
Mm-hmm. Do people, when they're working on resolutions like this, do they generally talk to you or somebody from the committee, or does the resolution just get passed and then we have
yes
to deal
yes
with?
Yes, everything. All kinds of different things happen. Some years, the resolutions committee has brought to me, as information access chair, all of the resolutions that they thought might relate to information access and that I might have a concern about. And then I've either gone and sat in on the discussion of those resolutions, or I've found other people from the committee, if they're there and available, to go and do that. Somebody that's preferably knowledgeable about the topic of the resolution. So if it's not something that I know very much about, but it's related to information access, I'd want to find someone, for example, who does you know, better have a knowledge of it, because again, what I really want to have happen is that we have some strategy outlined in the resolution that we could take as a blueprint, and that we have a philosophy of what's wrong, a clear description of the problem, and then that we have a strategy that's meaningful and doable, so that we can check them off and say, yeah, we accomplished these particular objectives and these outcomes did or didn't occur from it, but here's where we go. And then follow-up resolutions, of course, could make sense. But often what happens, very rarely do individuals themselves bring resolutions to the committee or to anyone on the committee, and I wish they would. It'd be great to see these before the convention, because, for example, if you're thinking about doing a resolution and we're pre-convention time or whatever, we can line up somebody who is knowledgeable about that, or could help you do the research. If somebody brought this resolution topic to me and said, this is what I'm thinking about doing, this is what I want to have happen, and then I could say, well, here are all the things that I know that we sort of might need or that make sense to me. Would you consider addressing those? Do you need any help to figure out where to get those pieces of information? Who are the people that you might want to talk to? Who are the people who you have talked to? And so then that could be a pretty orchestrated kind of thing. So that would be the best scenario. It never does happen. The second scenario that does work is when the Resolutions Committee brings them to us, and some years that's happened. I think it's an oversight when it doesn't. I mean, I think that Michael Byington's intention is that it do, but that does not always happen. And then, the other scenario, which is unfortunately all too common, is that I hear about them on the floor the same time y'all are hearing about them on the floor. And it's real awkward for me to try to stand up and talk against information access resolutions. I mean, that feels bad to me to do. I have kind of a futuristic view of access often, which is that my access view is I want access to this thing over time, and I want access to the way it's going to look in a few years, not the way it looks today. Because the way it looks today is probably not the way it's going to look very shortly. And we have to have both views. I mean, there's the view of what do we do about Quicken today or TurboTax today, and then there's the view of, what do we do about Intuit software tomorrow. We have to look at both.
So then the right approach to issues such as this might be short-term negotiation with the accessibility vendors and long-term setting up some sort of collaboration with the Intuits and the Microsofts and
Absolutely. The
Sonys and everybody else
Whoever.
In the world.
Yeah. Because it seems like the short-term solution is to get the short-term solution does include getting all the players together. I believe you have to involve Intuit, for example, in this case, in the short-term solution. Now, they are not going to make their product fully accessible in the short-term solution. I mean, we know that that's probably not reasonable and not going to happen. But is there a role they can play in the short-term solution? And obviously there is, and one of them is, of course, releasing alpha and beta product to people who have agreed to help work with them. Then the other piece of that is that we need to constantly be looking for alternative products because, money talks. I've changed applications over the years for lots of reasons, accessibility being one, but not the only one.
I don't know anybody using Quicken on the job,
mm-hmm.
but QuickBooks being a piece of software used to manage small businesses,
exactly.
I actually do know somebody who manages a small business with QuickBooks, and she claims it's perfectly accessible.
Yeah,
now,
I know several people who use QuickBooks, yes.
What does that mean? They can probably print an invoice, but they probably can't customize an invoice,
right.
But maybe they've decided they don't need to customize an invoice.
Right.
But do we then have to defend their ability to customize an invoice
right.
in the name of accessibility?
Right. See, I think the difference, what we need to talk about, and we probably need to, if not define some terms, we probably need to actually figure out some different terminologies and teach them to people. Accessible to me is software or products that meet sets of guidelines that we can define that have certain characteristics whether I use them or not. Usability is something different. It might include accessibility, but it also includes a number of other factors, like, for example, the user's ability to pick out and do things and their familiarity with things and their previous experience. It also has to do with how much of the product you need to use. So, for example, if you need to use only a certain feature and that part of the product is usable for you by moving your mouse cursor around and clicking on numbered icons that you've memorized the numbers of, and that works for you, and you are now using it, the product is very usable for you. It is not necessarily accessible. It's usable.
With literally thousands of software developers out there in the world, there's no way we can pursue all of them in an effort to gain accessibility. The resolution passed this summer may lack certain parliamentary niceties, may not have all of the strategy the way we would prefer to have it. For all of its shortcomings, it does do the one thing that it's crucial that such a resolution do, and that is prioritize. There's no question that resolving issues with Intuit software is now a priority of the Information Access Committee. Next week, on the thrilling conclusion of Making Sense of Your Dollars, I hope to have someone from Intuit to discuss these issues from their point of view. In the meantime, my email address is Mattioli, that's M-A-T-T-I-O-L-I, at pobox.com, and the Quicken email list is quicken-4-the-blind-subscribe@egroups.com. Can you spare